This is the Lubetkin on Communications podcast, episode number 53 for Sunday, May 18th, 2014. Welcome to the Lubetkin on Communications podcast. My name is Steve Lubetkin, podcast Steve on Twitter. I am the moderator of these podcast programs, which cover communications, public relations, and journalism,
and technology issues. In this program, we present a recording of a panel discussion that was held May 8th at Monmouth University in West Long Branch, it's in Monmouth County in central New Jersey. Video killed the radio star and Twitter buried Facebook. This was a joint presentation by the Jersey Shore Public Relations and Advertising Association and the New Jersey chapter of the Public Relations Society of America. The panel of media experts were Bruce Johnson, the news director of Greater Media New Jersey. He's a news director for their parent company, flagship station WCTC Radio in New Brunswick, and six other radio stations in the Garden State. Carla Bardenas, who's the Shore Bureau Chief for News 12 New Jersey, the cable TV news outlet. Christopher Robbins, the Monmouth County reporter for NJ.com, the website owned by the Star-Ledger of Newark, the largest newspaper in New Jersey. And also David Willis, who's a business writer with the Asbury Park Press, one of my journalism alma maters in the Asbury Park area, Monmouth and Ocean counties. The panel's moderated by Tony Civilella, who is the public affairs manager for Erickson Living and a member of the board of directors of the New Jersey chapter of PRSA. And it's worth mentioning that if you're interested in watching a video of this program, we do have a video version available. You can visit our news gathering website, statebroadcastnews.com, and you can see a full video of this program on that site. We thought we'd make an audio podcast available for those of our audience who are interested in taking it with them and listening to it while they're commuting or driving or whatever, and we thought an audio podcast might be useful for that. Let us know what you think. You can write to me at steve@beingthemedia.com. And here is Tony Civilella to introduce the panel.
Welcome, everybody, and thank you, Chris and Nicole, for having us here at Monmouth University. It is a beautiful campus on a not-so-beautiful day. So, again, I'm Tony Civilella. I'm going to be moderating. And today we're going to have a wonderful discussion about the news industry and the PR industry and where the two come together, where the rubber meets the road, and how we can work together. We've got some great journalists with us here today. But before I introduce them, I want to make mention that the transformation of the news landscape has changed, as we all know. From the old standard bearers for print, radio, television, now we're ushered into a new era of tablets, phones, journalists, citizen journalists, etc. So, just to read you a quick stat, according to the Pew Research Center for the People and the Press, online and digital news consumption continues to increase. Perhaps the most dramatic change in this news environment has been the rise of the social networking sites. From 9% to 19%, it's doubled the usage since 2010. So the trends in online news consumption are growing. Journalists are figuring out different ways to cover events, and PR practitioners like ourselves and those who will be have to find innovative ways as well to work with them. So with that being said, I want to introduce from the left, my right, to the left here, Christopher Robbins. He's a reporter with NJ.com. Christopher is a Monmouth County journalist and has spent 4 years in digital multimedia, pioneering new communication tools. As a reporter for NJ.com, he works with public relations personnel to develop in-depth feature stories about Monmouth County, and he does so in real time with breaking news. According to Christopher, covering the after effects and the recovery from Superstorm Sandy has kept his hands full over the last year. He's also done extensive reporting on the Seaside Park boardwalk fire, and when he was a journalist in Ogdensburg, New York, his work revealed ongoing problems in the affordable housing programs in that town. Chris is a 2011 graduate of the University of Kentucky College of Communication and Information Studies and the Sussex County native. Came quite a way from north, but now you're living down here. Come back here to New Jersey in 2013. So thank you, Christopher.
Thank you.
David Willis, a business writer and columnist for the Asbury Park Press for 25 years. He's been a journalist. David specializes in simplifying complex facts and figures and trends to help readers understand what's happening around them to make decisions that can better their lives. He's also the consumer advocate reporter for the Asbury Park Press, and his column, Press on Your Side, helps readers solve issues with businesses. David and I were talking, and he says he really enjoys serving as the consumer advocate for the Press on Your Side column. Amongst two of his favorite stories that he's worked on have been involving helping a family of a homebound, bedridden woman stay in her home after the mortgage company threatened to foreclose on her because she could not sign a proof of residency from required by a reverse mortgage. Another story was assisting a South Toms River family after they got hit with a $6,200 water bill. United Water, Toms River discovered it was a mistake, and David helped that family with that particular story. Next, we have Carla Bardinia from News 12 New Jersey. Carla is the Jersey Shore Bureau reporter and bureau chief for Monmouth County and Ocean County. Carla is an Emmy Award-winning and Edward R. Murrow Award-winning journalist who has covered everything from the Clinton impeachment hearings and scandal to the TWA Flight 800 disaster years ago to the 9/11 tragedy and, of course, Superstorm Sandy aftermath. Carla has formerly served as the New Jersey Bureau Chief for WPIX Channel 11, and I'm happy to call Carla a friend and a former colleague. We worked together some years back, so thank you, Carla, for coming. And finally, Bruce Johnson is news director for Greater Media New Jersey. Bruce serves as the news and sports director there for the parent company, WCTC Radio, and six other radio stations here in the Garden State. He hosts the statewide Greater Media New Jersey News Minute and anchors the news and sports on the Burt Barron Show. He's also a 23-year voice of the Rutgers Scarlet Knights football men's basketball and women's basketball teams. Bruce also considers his reporting on Superstorm Sandy and its aftermath to be amongst the most significant stories that he has worked on. So again, thank you, everybody. So again, I mentioned the change, the evolution in the news industry and in the PR field. Let's talk a little bit, if one of you want to jump in. What is a typical day like for you, if there is such a thing as a typical day? Carla, you work in the television news industry. Give us an idea of what that
is
like.
Well, there's certainly no typical day. And the changes that we've had in television over the many years, I've been with News 12 for 17 years. So when I first started, you know, we had a morning show that ended at 9, and I got in at 9, so I didn't have to worry about that show. We had a 5 o'clock newscast, a 6 o'clock newscast, a 10 o'clock newscast. Now we're live from 5 a.m. through 10:30 in the morning. We're live at noon. We're live from 2 straight through 6:30. And then we're live again from 7 to 11 in the evening. So it certainly has changed. And, of course, when the business changes, we have to change. I no longer have a full day to work on one story. I get in the morning. We have a conference call where, you know, I bring to the table my story ideas, what I'm interested in doing. And perhaps, you know, a PR person has called me and has some suggestions and so forth. And we have to prioritize. For me, I'm always looking how it affects my viewers. And my responsibility, my obligation is to the people who live at the shore, Monmouth and Ocean counties. So in the morning, I'm going to look at stories, and I'm going to try to figure out why I think a story should be covered. How many people does it affect? I might not be able to get to that PR event because another story is going to trump it. And so it's very difficult for me to let people know if we can be there or not. So those decisions don't get made until the morning. And then they send us out. And so my day is never the same because I now have a live truck. I'm the only reporter at News 12 that has, very lucky of me, sometimes very lucky, but we have a full-time microwave truck out of the Shore Bureau because geographically we can hit the tower that's in Brick Township. So we're live a lot. And when the microwave doesn't hit the tower, we have a backpack. And the backpack also can be live. So we have that. And then if those two both fail, we also have the capability of sending it via the computer. So we could send it through the laptop via FTP. So, you know, we have different producers all through the day. We have a morning producer, a noon producer, 2 to 5, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, all through the night. And so every producer thinks his or her show is the most important show. So, you know, I want you live in my show, but I've been live for 4 hours. You know, can I go to the bathroom? Can I, you know, have a moment, you know, to gather information? We need you live at 2. We need you live at 2:30. We need you live at 3. So it's changed a lot. It's changed a lot, and there's no typical day. There's no typical day.
It seems like the immediacy of getting the news out there as quickly as possible is the biggest change.
Yeah, it's changed a lot.
How about you, Bruce? What's changed in the years you've been since 1980?
Today is not a typical day because I got to sleep until 5:30 to get in here. But normally my typical day, I get up at 4, have to be at work at 5 in New Brunswick. And I'm on various platforms, whether it be 1450 WCTC AM, Magic 98.3 FM, our greater media stations in Morristown, down in Belmar and Manahawkin. From 6 a.m. till noon, I do 16 newscasts a day, which is my typical day. And I think that, and I've been in radio since 1975. I predate the typewriter. I'm back to when they were, were scrawling things on the cave wall. But the biggest thing right now that I have found, because, you know, news is news, no matter what decade, what generation. However, the biggest thing for me is now to navigate the incredible amount of information which comes in. I mean, back in the old days, we had the AP wire, the telephone, and whatever we saw out of the newspaper. Today, I come in at 5 o'clock, and I've got the same newspapers, Star Ledger, Home News Tribune, the New York tabloids, the New York Times, which we peruse. We have the AP, of course. But now we have this incredible amount of websites we can go to, Twitter feeds, not so much Facebook, but, you know, websites galore. And the biggest thing I have found, as simplistic as it may seem, the way my world has changed is to become much more focused than I ever was, to have much more of a routine to know where I have to go on a given day. And because you can be overwhelmed by what's out there right now. And so I think that I have become laser focused more than I probably want to be, just to be able to know what I need to get out, because on radio, your deadline is every half hour. So I don't have a lot of time to react. It's pretty much figure out what needs to get out there and to be able to put it out there in organized fashion. Because the one thing about, I've come to find, and I'm speaking now for local radio, the digital revolution has been great on many fronts, but where it's been bad is that when management has figured out that the digital technology allows somebody like me or Carla or whomever to do more things, that what used to take 3 people to do, it all falls now in one person's lap. So that when I mention now that there's a lot going on, there's a lot of balls to juggle, there's a lot of information to decipher, you're on your own. There are no interns in Morning Drive, at least where I am. There are no assistants. It's pretty much the one-armed paper hanger. We pretty much have to do it all. So that gets back to what I said before, that for me, the challenge in 2014 is to know exactly what I want, what the audience, I think, needs to know, and just to try to stay true to the course as often as possible.
Great, thank you. David, how have deadlines changed at the press, and what's typical for you?
Well, I mean, in the old days, I would cover a night meeting in a town and write 2-3 stories until 2 o'clock in the morning. I'd have all day to really work on a story. Now it's all instant, really. I mean, I have to, when I come in a day, I might have a story I'm working on, something might break, maybe from the Attorney General's office or something like that. I have to have a story up on our website in about 15 minutes. So I got to write what I know right away, put it up there quickly. I have to tweet it. I have to put it up on our social media sites, on my own Facebook page, on my column's Facebook page. I have to put on Google Plus. I have to make sure we have the story is ready for our mobile apps. You know, that we have a smartphone app and a tablet app. So I have to be able to have my story ready for whoever wants to read it any way they want to read it. So it's no longer about the paper. It's about providing information the way our reader wants to consume it. So it's, you know, 140 characters, or it's a long story, or it's five paragraphs, or whatever. I think that's really the biggest change. Plus, I'm also, you know, I'm an old print guy. I've been a reporter since 1988, and I was at Rutgers before that as a reporter at the student paper. And back then, it was all the newspaper. But now I have to do video, and I had to learn how to, you know, make sure the sound is good. It's something I never would realize that's important. And you know, I use an iPhone, and I have to edit the thing on my phone, zip it up there, and it's all got to be quick. I mean, and there's fewer people to do things too. If you haven't noticed, the news business has shrunk a lot. So the Asbury Park Press used to have about 1,600 people working there on 66, and now we have about 400. So that's the entire building, but that, you can think of what's happened to the newsroom since then, since I've been there at least. So it's just all quick. So when people send press releases, I'm looking for local. How does it affect local people? For some reason, I get a lot of press releases from businesses that think I'm interested in their business from California or New York or, you know, or Philadelphia, and they just get trashed. But so I'm looking for local stuff, and I'm always interested when a PR person asks me what my deadline is, because my deadline's now. So, you know, and if it isn't now, you say, well, I can't do it now, but, you know, how does 3 sound? I say, well, that's good. How about 12? I mean, you know, it's all as quick as I can get it. And that's also changed. So that's kind of, I think.
Thank you, Christopher. Social media, that's changed things. How does it affect what you do?
It hasn't changed things as much as you think, because as it has already been stated, the news is still the news, and our job is to go out there and get it and deliver it in, act as gatekeepers, because there's a lot of information out there, and deliver it in easy, edible portions to our readers or our viewers or our listeners. But social media has changed things for me, because information moves a lot quicker now. And that works both ways for us. We are getting a glut of information from wonderful public relations professionals every day, usually about 20 an hour. And we have to sift through and figure out, okay, what are our consumers going to be interested in? On the other hand, we are also asked to be more immediate, which means we do not have the same ability to write good, in-depth stories that we used to. Compounding that issue is something that David brought up. The newsroom is much smaller now, too. So you're forced to be a jack of all trades. For example, I work for NJ.com. In Monmouth County, we have a 3-reporter bureau that's covering 53 municipalities, the county government, institutions like Monmouth University and Brookdale Community College, Meridian Health, Barnabas Health. You get the picture. There's a lot of things happening in Monmouth County with 3 people to cover it, and we really have to pick and choose what gets out there. as a result, you're probably getting less news than you got before from a newsroom. We'd like to think that you're getting a better product. And some of that information cannot come in more than 140 characters, because simply our resources are stretched thin.
Okay, we talked about how the newsrooms are shrinking. As PR practitioners, let's jump right into it. What can we do to help you folks with content and provide you more stories? And what's the best way to go about doing that?
Well, from my perspective, I think the best suggestion would be to stop being so concerned about feeding the beast. One of the nice things about social media and the ability to do things digitally is people like us are far less important in the information world than we used to be, because public relations people have the ability to get information out to the people they want to get it to themselves. So you can actually bypass major publications and do things yourself. Secondly, I think thanks to a lot of the applications that are related to Twitter and cell phones and Facebook, you can now localize your information and make sure you're getting your information out to the right people. So something like a local news source isn't quite as necessary as it used to be. That's not to say reporters don't have their place and that they shouldn't be reached out to. But that's to say that you have more power than you used to be. Public relations professionals are more important now than they were in the past. Secondly, you need to tailor your press releases to the issue that's being covered. Reporters like to cover events, but we do have beats. We have areas of expertise. If you tailor a press release or a public relations statement to an issue that's current, especially to the people who are living in the locality where an event is happening, you're a lot more likely to get a bite from a reporter.
Good, thank you. Carla?
Well, I guess what I would say, and I don't know how, try not to overdo it. Understand that our days are crazy, and if you're calling us on any given day about an event that's happening in a month, we're probably not going to give it much attention, as we don't make those decisions until that very day. So, you know, plant your seed, tell us about it, but just understand that we really are in no position to let you know whether we're going to be able to cover it or not. I think that, to me, is when we hear that question, I'm like, oh, geez, they're asking us if we can cover something in June. I don't know. I mean, you just don't know. Again, you have to prioritize. And I dare to say this, but try not to be super annoying in terms of calling. Really, the best way is, considering the kind of deadlines we have during the day, is to shoot an email and make it very brief, right to the point. Who, what, where, when, how. That's it. Don't get complicated. If I have something that's 3 pages that's sent to me, I don't have the time to read it. If it doesn't catch my eye immediately, I'm not reading it. And if it's not local to me, I'm not interested. So it has to be, for me, it has to be Monmouth or Ocean counties. If I see something that is interesting to me on a statewide level, I'll pass it along to someone else. But if it doesn't catch my eye right away, it really, I'm done. You know, I have 300 other emails to open. So that, to me, is my biggest advice. If it's a month away, shoot a quick email. Who, what, where, and when. Maybe the day before, shoot another email. That morning, maybe follow up with a phone call. That's my suggestion. If you have a cell phone number of a reporter, which we almost never give out, but if you do, use it sparingly. Don't overdo it. And know your audience, I think, too, is another thing. Know that if you have an event where you have some people bagging groceries or something for a client, maybe it's not going to be on News 12 New Jersey, or maybe it will, depending on what it is. But maybe it's going to be in a weekly paper, or maybe it's going to be more local. Maybe if it's happening here in West Long Branch, maybe you find a paper that's just West Long Branch. But I wouldn't send 1,000 press releases hoping that every single one is going to get covered. You have to kind of pick and choose what you think would be a great TV story, a story that's a visual, a story that's emotional, a story that's unique, not necessarily, you know, every little press release that you have. So if you want things to be covered, I would say, you know, target where you're sending them. You know, something that maybe can make it in print will not make it in TV. So that's a recommendation also. And I hate to say don't be annoying, but I mean that in the most loving way. I really do. Just limit the emails and limit the phone calls and really try to prioritize.
Thank you, Carl. Bruce, what...
To give you some insight into what I look at, and we are very email-oriented. Almost all of my work is done on email these days, is the way it's evolved. But if you were to be in our newsroom on our computers, you would have to, first of all, look at the enormous amount of emails we get from state government, from every single assemblywoman, every single state senator. Governor Christie's his people are firing out 15 emails a day. And then you have Rutgers University, which is in our backyard, all that they send out. So once you get past the government institution emails, that's when the PR emails start to go to the front. And I know when I work morning drive, when I get in at 6 a.m., by the time it gets to about 5 a.m., by the time it gets to be 10 a.m., I've got 25 emails from different PR firms, different people trying to pitch their client, pitch their idea. I'm pretty good at filtering out what I don't need right away, but kind of playing off what Carla said, once you're able to get through all that noise, once you're able to get the wheat from the chaff, whatever cliche you want to use, it's imperative that your emails are very simple. It's almost like the resume type world where you want to cut through, make it appealing to the eye, but make it very simple, the who, what, why, when, how, and where. And not to write it in such a way where it's, you know, where's Waldo, where you have to find the hook to the whole thing, where it's like on the 31st line. Simple is class, simple cuts right to the quick. But the biggest thing that I have, two things, one of which is when I reach out to a PR person to play off of their email, I get the email, let's say it's, this is a bad example, but the Nigerian girl situation, which is a hot story right now, and somehow one of the PR people gives me a Nigerian expert or gives me somebody who used to live in Nigeria, knows that culture, whatever. Bad example, but I'll use it anyway. And so I reach out to PR person A at 9:30 a.m. on Wednesday. The story's hot right now. I say, can I get your person before noon or by the end of the day? And I'm told, well, they're available like on Monday, you know, or I'll get back to you at 2 o'clock. My feeling is very selfish. My feeling is if you're pitching something, you better be able to get that person to the phone. You better be able to get that person to us within a couple of hours. And I don't say that meanly. I don't say that like, you know, I'm more important. Just that if we're making the connection to you off of your email, we hope you can deliver that person in a relatively short amount of time. That's the most annoying thing, where, you know, you have a nice email, but there's no connect. And the other thing is, for me, is that be a little bit proactive on your end. If there is a hot topic going on, the George Zimmerman trial, and you've got a legal contact that you can pitch to us, don't wait for us to reach out to you. You know, say, we've got this person waiting today on this hot topic, which you know is on every newscast. That's really excellent. When we get that kind of a connection, we hit it out of the park. So kind of think along the news lines. I think as Carla inferred, there's nothing more frustrating than, you know, you're in the middle of Superstorm Sandy recovery and you get an email about a Labor Day event coming up, which will feature the Girl Scouts of Brick Township. Not to demean anyone, but it's kind of like, you know, come on. So, try to play along as a news person. Try to stay on top of the news and try to feed the monster that way. And I love that when that happens.
David, I imagine you receive
I get a lot of emails, but just to follow up, on the day Sandy hit, I covered utilities for that. So I'm a utilities reporter for the paper as well. So my Sandy coverage was mostly power outages. So I got a call from a PR person on the day of Sandy, but I'd been working all night because we had 24 power there. And he wanted me to write about a green product. And I said, do you know where you're calling? He goes, I said, you're calling New Jersey. You know, it's a hurricane going on. Seriously? And I actually said, I mean, I'm usually pretty nice to PR people, but I said, seriously, are you kidding me? And I said, I'm not, no thanks. You know, and I hung up the phone. So I think that one of the most important things that, as a business reporter, most PR people are pitching a business client or maybe a nonprofit client or something like that. The most important thing, I think, is to know who you're pitching to. So I'm a business reporter. I used to real estate, retailing, utilities, telecom, technology, energy, and a few other things. So first of all, you should know what I cover. You should know where I work. I work for the Asbury Park Press. You should know something about the paper that we cover Monmouth and Ocean Counties. You should know we're daily. So don't send me something, as I mentioned before, from Philadelphia. I'm not going to be interested. Don't send me about your website, which is a great one, because I'm going to ask you where your website's based. And if you say New York, sorry. Well, but anyone can get the website, even people in Monmouth and Ocean Counties. And I say, well, yeah, then I'd be covering Google. I mean, you know, I cover employers. So if the company is based in Monmouth County, I'm interested because who is my audience? We're a consumer publication. So my audience, when it comes to the company, are the employees. And maybe people who buy the product. But it's all about the economy of that company. You know, they're your employer, there's jobs there, there's 1,000 people working there. You know, I was talking to Sam earlier, I stopped covering Lucent when they moved out of Homedale. You know, I mean, it's the way it went. So I want to know, Monmouth Ocean Counties, the best way to get my attention is to put that in the subject field, Monmouth County business in the subject field, because I look at my email and I define in mass. Because as a business writer, I also have the luxury of shipping things off to my editor. So sorry, ask your editor. You know, so I'm not interested in getting releases about library readings. That's always a favorite of mine. And they're good things. I mean, they have a place in the paper. Hopefully. That's a worthwhile event. It's worthwhile to be pitched, but it's not. It shouldn't come to me because it's not something that I'm really going to deal with. And also, I didn't know that it was shipped to 50 other people. So when I ship it to somebody and say, "Hey, you know, you might be interested in this," that person just got it 5 times. You know, so the colleagues all pissed off at me. So I just really think it's important to know who you're doing, who you're shipping, and then when you call. You say, "Hey, did you get my release? Yes or no? Well, what do you think? Well, I'll put it aside and I'll get to it. Don't call me tomorrow."
I'd like to pick up.
Because I will get to it, or I won't. But I got it. You know, I know if there's a story there, I'm going to be coming up back to it because I have responsibility. To my editors, I gotta churn stories out. I need stories all the time, and I don't have the luxury. I'm not a breaking news guy, so you know I'm not covering the fires. I'm not covering the town meetings. I need to have a steady stream of stories. So, you know, that's kind of my thing.
I'd like to pick up on something that David and Carla talked about a little bit, and he's not a breaking news guy, and he works in a newsroom, and you have a very well-defined beat. I come from a print background originally. When I was up in Ogdensburg, New York, I worked in a print publication, had a very well-defined beat. I was covering city government and 4 universities up there, and when I came here, a three-person newsroom, I'm supposed to be covering government and politics. The reality is we cover everything because you have to. There's just too much out there. So to a certain extent, it's appropriate to fire a press release out there because as newsrooms get smaller, reporters are forced to wear many hats and cover a lot of things. But also, when you're dealing with a publication like the press, where reporters do have pretty well-defined beats, you should be aware of who you're sending your press releases to.
Yeah, I mean, I think it really comes down to, while sending something to NJ.com would be a, you know, that could be a, you know that, you know what they do. You know that there's a statewide website. You know that there's a couple people working there. They might know, you know, they're going to be interested in what you had to tell them. But not everyone is the same, is really all I'm saying. So if you're going to send me the business, you should know that Dave is, you know, a business reporter, and he covers Monmouth Ocean County, and that's he's an appropriate person. And I know why this happens, because my name is on PR lists. I mean, I'm on lists all over the place, and there are companies that make money by providing source lists to public relations professionals, and I get it. So I just would love it when, you know, people send me things that directly, and I know people in the room. Sam would send me stuff, but he knows what it's all about.
Hey, David, you said don't contact you tomorrow. I got to make a calendar.
No, it's cool. It's cool. You can contact me anytime.
But I think the consensus here is know the topic, know the audience, and know the journalist, obviously. At this point, do we have any questions? I want this to be interactive. So if anybody, Sam.
We're talking a lot about breaking news and the pressure of the day. And there was a comment made, I think it was Christopher, who said, you know, you folks in PR have your own means of disseminating whatever it is you want to get out. What's left other than doing quick breaking news stories?
What, is there room for an analytical pieces and trend pieces that you would be listening for or looking for?
That space is shrinking every day. For example, I can invest 2 or 3 hours writing a very well-researched feature story or event story with photos that I've taken myself, put together a nice photo gallery, and put it up on our website. And we actually, we're a business, we track how our news does on the website. And it may end up with 2,000, 3,000 hits, including the photo gallery. If I spend that time instead going down to Seaside Park to cover a boardwalk fire, I'm going to get 500,000 hits. Or even if I spend that time to cover a small apartment fire in Keensburg, that's still going to get 100,000 hits. So the more breaking news there is, the more that conscientious quality journalism is getting crowded out, especially as newsrooms shrink. I don't think there's a journalist around who wouldn't prefer to do the investigative quality feature work that's out there, but there just aren't enough of us to do it anymore.
I work, my main station I work at is a news talk station. And so a lot of times we'll tell our PR news contacts that the idea you're pitching us is not something for a newscast where the longest story would ever do is like a minute 15. I mean, that's an exception. We're pretty much doing 45-second stories. But we'll tell the PR person, listen, you know, it's not going to work for a newscast. We're too short. How about going on a talk show? Because by going on a talk show, not only do you get a half an hour or an hour, particularly in morning drive, if you're fortunate, but we also stream it live. And we also podcast our interviews, so they're up on our website for X amount of days. So although this is a news-driven panel here, I know in radio we do a lot of diverting, not because we're trying to get you off of our phone, but diverting you to where you can get more exposure and long-form platforms for your client.
Bruce, you mentioned the talk show concept and approaching that. Has social media affected?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds stupid to say I love social media. I'm just like anybody else on Twitter, on Facebook, etc. But in talk radio, social media, my theory is, has really hurt us, and the numbers show that, the ratings show that, whatever metrics we go by, is because what has happened is, long story short, back in the halcyon days of talk radio, and I'm not talking about Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, I'm talking about the next level of people. Joe Blow from Woodbridge would love calling up to talk to host A, but Joe Blow would have to wait on hold for 5-10 minutes, get on air, 12 seconds into their question, they'd be cut off by the root host, summarily dismissed to the ether, to the netherworld, whatever. And so it became a very rude process where these callers were almost becoming, fodder. Now with social media, you can become your own star. You can blog, you can tweet, you can go on Facebook, you can pretty much be the guy, the girl, and not have to be filtered by a talk show host and roughed up by a talk show host. So my point is, I think that talk radio has been affected by social media in a negative way because people are figuring out they don't need to go that way. They can be their own shining star on a different social media platform. So while I think it's helped news exponentially, the talk show end of it, I think, has been hurt because people have figured out there's a better way to do it.
Yes.
I just want to...
Go ahead, David.
One thing that kind of what Chris said. I think that there is still a space, in our newsroom at least, for quality, long-form journalism that people expect from a newspaper. That's also a digital media company, like the Asbury Park Press. We have like 3 or 4 reporters who are dedicated really to projects work, to do real watchdog journalism that our readers expect from us. So while there is definitely a shrinking of the newsroom, at least when you have a bigger organization with a bigger number of reporters working who can cover different things, I think there still is a desire for the community, from the community, for that kind of work, because that's what they're on Twitter and they're getting their breaking news from Jersey Shore Hurricane News, they're getting their breaking news from Twitter, they're getting their breaking news from NJ.com, they're getting their breaking news from us, they're from everyone at the table here. But I think they also demand, and where newspapers still have a good foothold is in watchdog journalism. So that's one of the missions of the press, and that's one of the places that the editors of the paper have decided to put resources. So there's a projects team. We've done stories about Sandy charities, we've done stories about Sandy spending, just like Chris's colleagues at the Ledger have done, and NJ.com have done too. I mean, so I think that there's still a role there for real watchdog, because that's the kind of thing that we can do that you can't really get anywhere else. Either there's not the experience of putting those kind of projects together, the research that's involved, the number crunching that's involved. You can't get that on Jersey Shore Hurricane News.
True.
You know, I mean, and even the TV guys, they do some really good work that is long form, and it might last a day or two in terms of reports, or part one or part two. And I really think that's where, when you're pitching a story to some of us up here, we're professionals. We've done this a long time. We see stories where you might not. I mean, I'm gonna key in on an angle that you might not have thought of. That might be better off. It might be a better way of reaching what you want to do and what we want to do, and doing it together. So I'm just really. I've been through a lot of stuff in our business. I've been through layoffs. I watched people be walked out in front of me, and walked out the door. And so I think now is a great time. I'm pretty up on the business. It's why I came. If I wasn't going to be up on the business, I wouldn't have come. I wouldn't have come to talk to you, because who really wants to sit through that, But I am pretty excited about what we do and how we present information to people and the work that my colleagues do. I think it's pretty great.
Thank you. Do you have a question?
David said, something that is so essential for all of you, because really this is about trying to work with public relations people. Know the know the story. David mentioned that perhaps he'll hone in on something, or I'll hone in on something that you guys aren't seeing as maybe the angle of a story. And what I would say is really try to know what the real story is on something. Let me give you an example. I actually was mentoring a young woman who wanted to be a reporter in television. And, you know, she brought me a press release, and it was Santa was visiting a bunch of children at a hangar at Newark Airport. And she was going to go out with a local camera from one of the local cable companies that had a public access. She went and shot this whole thing, and she wanted me to take a look at it. She brought it back to me, and she asked me my thoughts on it. Now, here we go. We have this press release that came in, and it said what was happening. Santa was visiting, and she made the whole story about Santa visiting. To me, the story was about all those children in that room who have never, who otherwise would not have had a gift for Christmas. So what I would say to you is look for those kinds of stories. Maybe talk to the teachers and the principals that are bringing their kids in and ask them, hey, is there a story there? Is there a human interest story on any of those kids that would be willing to speak to us? You know, do they have a very unique situation? You know, as it turns out, I later found out there were kids that were actually homeless, living in cars with, you know, with their loved ones. And to me, that's the story. If I could go to an event like that and go and talk to that kid and that kid's mom, that's real. And that's something that I don't care who you are, you watch that at home, that gets you. That's television. When you can connect with a viewer on that level, and then people at home want to say, what can I do? What can I do to make a difference? You now have your audience hooked, involved. They want to see more. That's a story. You know, she brought, and I felt terribly to say to her, the story was not about you doing a stand-up on Santa's lap and sitting down and all of that. No, no, no. You never talked to really any of these kids. Well, I don't know if I was able to talk to kids. Well, did you ask? You know, maybe in advance you could have made some phone calls and you could have tried to, you know, get a release to talk to one of those children and a parent. And, you know, I definitely think from the work she showed me later on that she did sort of start to get it. And so that was a good moment. But from a PR perspective, if you can find those stories, that's golden.
So it's not necessarily the PR event itself. It's the story behind what was that Santa visit, et cetera.
Yeah, you rarely see a good news story that just says something happened. Mm-hmm. It's always the why is it important or how is it important.
Right, right. You've been waiting patiently. You have a question?
No, I mean, this is great content. Based on what everyone has said and having kind of watched this industry over the last 30 years, your need for content is growing because you've got to fill this larger funnel. Whether you're at a print publication and you need video, you need 24/7 stories so you don't have too much repeat on these different newscasts. And here we are on the other side feeding you pitches. It seems to me what we should be feeding you and what I'm seeing in certain markets is we should be feeding you the stories that you're looking for in the form of maybe a sound bite that we've recorded at an event that we can send to you in a write-up, or video that we've taken of someone talking because you can't get to the event. There's just not enough crews available, but it's newsworthy because it's local. So I guess my question is, what types of materials are you willing to accept, and are you willing to use news items that we create if we do it the right way? In other words, we're not strictly promoting clients, but let's say we have a client that's part of an event, and we give you good material. So a lot of us come out of J schools as well. Are you willing to use that, and what formats are you looking for?
Most television stations will not allow that, actually, for a number of reasons. We want to be able to ask our own questions. We don't want something that's sort of cherry-picked. We want to be able to ask really anything pertaining to the subject. So that's one thing. And then there are certainly technical issues. We're HD, so we get something that's SD, and all of a sudden the video is a different size, and it's not going to look good, and it's especially not going to look good on a big screen television, which everyone has. So for a number of reasons, we don't accept that. I don't know if
no, we would not take audio from a PR firm, only because, as she said, we need to be controlling the questioning and all that. We just wouldn't do that. But if you wanted to call us and say, client A is set to talk to you in a half an hour,
we have a self-published part of the website that I've encouraged some people to submit a release if they want something about. It's usually things like PTOs and community groups, and they have some news they want to put out. They can send it to our website, and then it's reviewed to make sure it's not promotional or advertising. And there could be a photo too, make sure it's not, you know, that it meets our standards in terms of being in focus and, you know, all sorts of things. So we're a little bit more lenient about that kind of thing. When people call me up and they say, "Hey, I have produced, we have this piece," I sit in for the money for the business editor when he's out. And we run this. I said, "Well, no, we don't really run submitted stories in the newspaper." That's changing to a degree. I mean, I'm not quite sure where that stands in terms of contributed content. With the shrinking of newsrooms, sometimes newspapers will accept contributed content on specific things, usually if it's solicited by us, I think. Is what they're looking for.
And that's what I'm saying.
I mean, well, like for instance, if the editors, and this is above my really pay grade, but if an editor wants, you know, they're thinking about, let's say they're doing a story on walking trails in New Jersey, they might have someone who is a head of a walking club or some kind of a something or other submit a contributed piece about his or her experience. That's a way to get into the paper, I think. But if it's an issue piece, if it's something where there's a side to it or this side or that side to it, probably not going to happen in terms of contributing. And if it's promotional, forget about it.
Yeah.
But I think we have a little bit more leeway. We do, like, for instance, on Mondays, we have a working woman kind of thing where women-owned businesses can submit a piece about their business and what they do and how they started and a little story about what happened. And that's submitted to the business editor, and they edit it and like they would a story, and they make changes. You know, they don't. When you submit something to the newspaper, you lose all your ability to make over that, you control. I mean, the editor will go over things with you, and we sign a photo. That's the one thing we tend not to give up is our photography. We need to have photos that, much like TV, that look a certain way, yes, certain standards. So that's a way of contributing content. You know, when businesses say, "Hey, how do I get in the business?" I say, "Well, what's your story?" You know, maybe you'll fit that feature, but that's something that we solicit.
Mm-hmm. And talking about the promotional end of it too, which I just think is kind of an interesting point that you brought up, the difference between a news story and an ad, there's a big difference. If you have a product that you want to get on the air and you want us to just basically say that your product is great and get it on the air, not happening. That's called an ad, and you have to call the sales department to get time on for a commercial. However, if you have a story, for example, about a product that a single mom made, she has four kids, she has three jobs, she made it out of her kitchen or her garage, she made it organically, her kid helped her kid's five, that's a story.
Right.
Then your product, maybe, will be mentioned in the story.
Yeah.
There's a big difference between an ad and a story, and we debate that all the time in the newsroom.
I mean, one of the most important things that when you're writing about a business is not so much what the business does, It's about the story behind the business, how they started. Maybe they left Wall Street and they started this cookie store, cookie business, or whatever. That's why you see very few stories about plumbers and lawyers and that type of thing, because there has to be a story behind it. So that's what you're focusing on. And I'm sorry, you're curious.
It's all right. I think what you've heard here is very true. It depends on your publication, and it depends on your reporter, but the type of publication is also important. If you'll notice, when I worked in Northern New York, I was doing hyperlocal news, and a lot of the content, especially in our Sunday papers, was submitted from the community. It was press releases from people like the local VFW Post, local churches, student groups at the local universities that we simply could not spare a reporter to write about, but that our consumers really wanted to hear about and wanted to know. So if you go hyperlocal, you're probably a lot more likely to get something that you've written published into the paper, because they're going to see the importance of informing people in their community. On NJ.com, we have no rule against running user-submitted content, even on our news pages. Photos, video, sound bites, it's fair game, but you are going to go through the gatekeeper of a reporter. For me, I would never want to write quotes or run quotes that are just blindly submitted to me, because I don't know the circumstances under which those quotes were given. Bruce made the exact same point. Also, if you look at NJ.com's front page, and we only put the stuff that we deem that is performing the best on our front page, you'll notice that the only stuff that's really coming from PR people on our front page are the quotes that are coming from the public information officers of police departments and flacks for New Jersey politicians. So the consumer-oriented PR releases, yes, some of them are getting written, but they're not making it to the front page, which is where your audience is.
Sir, you have a question?
Hi, good morning. Frank Earl, SMGA. You've been doing for 30 years. When I notice is the barrier is diminishing, where you're saying there's technical issues where somebody might not be able to send you an HD signal. What I'm noticing is that Skype is being now used, and you see these people in front of their computer, and they're on CNN. So do you see yourself embracing that technology where you're having a Skype conversation with somebody? Maybe they're an expert in their field, and you said there's limited resources on camera people and reporters, but in a sense, you're interviewing them remotely. So you're at the station, they're at their computer via Skype. Are you embracing that technology?
We've certainly used it, and I think that there's room to use it. However, since we're New Jersey, News 12 New Jersey, we want to talk to people here, and it's always going to look better if we go and get them, if we go and meet them, you know, wherever that may be. However, there have been instances where I have used Skype in some of my reporting. I did a story about a woman whose children were taken overseas by her husband, and I couldn't get a hold of him any other way. So I did do a Skype interview with him from overseas. And occasionally telephone interviews also, although it's not ideal for television. In some instances, that really is going to be the only way you're going to make that contact, especially in a high-profile case where you really need to get the other, I mean, you have to get that other side, even if they're wherever. So yes, I mean, we certainly do embrace it, and when we can use it, when we can't get to the person any other way, then sure, but it's not ideal because it doesn't look the same.
We're starting to see a lot of citizen journalism where it's a live event. They're recording it overseas as it happens. And so are you also accepting that type of feeds as well?
It really is for us on a case-by-case basis. We'd have to review it, what circumstances, who is it. You know, we want to be careful that we don't fall into a case of accepting propaganda.
Right.
So, you know, it has to follow all the standards of journalism.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that you're competing with these citizen journalists? Any of you nowadays? Do you ever get that feeling?
I don't really think. No. I don't really think so. I mean, I think citizen journalists are another source for us. And if you notice, if you remember the fire in the Pine Lands a couple of weeks ago, I think there were a lot of the photos that came out of there that we all used. I think, or at least we retweeted them.
Sure.
Were from people who were on the scene. Local residents take a picture of the fire. They're there. and we all want to provide that information. So with permission, I think people call up or they ask, we say, hey, can we use this? Mm-hmm. And the person, you know, hopefully will say yes. And then we will put that into our feeds and, you know, our Twitter feeds and our Facebook page, and our, you know, maybe get put in our gallery with proper credits, you know, the whole bit. I mean, I think that there's just another source for reporters. I mean, last week, big story, one of the big fun stories was about the guy who, the family who found the dog at the SPCA. That came off of a Facebook post. I mean, when a friend of mine sent it to me, I sent it to an editor because, you know, that's not a citizen journalism, but that's coming off of social media. I mean, we get inundated with information from all over the place. And if it comes from social media, it's a story, it's a tip. We send a photographer, a reporter out, you know, NJ.com picks it up. You know, it's all part of the mix, really. I mean, it's just giving people information the way they want to see it.
Good reporting is not done sitting down. It's you have to be there. And if you can't travel out, I was lucky enough to be able to travel down to the Ocean County fires in the Pinelands, and I covered it there. But if you can't travel down there, then if you do have a citizen journalist who is credible that you can interview from a newsroom, like if you're doing television or web video, then that's a great resource to have, and that's very helpful. And I think we have used that at NJ.com. We've used eyewitnesses like that. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it is accepted practice to use eyewitnesses if you can't be at the scene, but you know someone is, to interview them and use them as a source.
And as PR practitioners, how can we further be a resource to you when we're not pitching you a story so that we're in your minds, you know, if we have... folks that you might want to interview, we have facts and figures. Well, what's the best way to stay in your minds?
One resource that I've tragically underused is at a place like Monmouth University, you have all these people who are experts in their fields who have been studying topics and issues for their entire career. So you can have those people available. When breaking news hits, you can tell us who you have available, so we know that we have that resource, and we know we can work with a public relations person who can get us the information that our consumers want and need if something happens.
Any more questions? Sam, do you have none?
On that line, folks use, on a deadline situation, do you use a resource like ProfNet, where there's a listing of professional expert spokespeople? Have you ever used those?
Well, because I'm so Monmouth County centric, I know a lot of the professors who are experts in their fields here. When I worked in St. Lawrence County, New York, I had those four schools I mentioned, and I knew almost all of the faculty who did what, who was a good interview, who could give me a good quote. And so I never had to use ProfNet.
I never have either.
I've used ProfNet. Because of the stories, the business stories that we've had to do, sometimes there's a study or an expert that you don't know about, or if you're writing a, you know, you might have some local people, but you might be looking for a study. Usually, I've used ProfNet, and I narrow it down. So, what I use is for college people, college PR people. I think I do consultants and a few others, but I don't hit everybody. I mean, I'm not sure it goes out to all PR people. So I think I forgot what I do. It's been a while, but I've used it before.
Yes, please.
Tony, another thing we haven't talked about, and I use it a lot, and it's kind of a basic thing, but we love to have what we call multiple source taping opportunities. In other words, as a PR person, don't think that we only want you to provide one person to us, because what will happen is, in radio in particular, Mondays are dreadful news days. Monday morning drive, there's not a lot going on a normal day. So if you've got a client you want to pitch about a new building going up wherever, which will create a lot of jobs, we would love to be able to talk to the brick and mortar person in that project to find out the X's and O's of the new building, but we'd also like to talk to somebody about the economic impact on the community, And so what we will do is we'll, not at a conference call, because conference calls sound horrible on radio, but by talking to each person individually back to back, on a Thursday we'll do a story about the brick and mortar phase of your proposal, and then on the Monday we'll bring back the person who will talk about the economic impact and kind of do a quasi feature on Monday morning, to be honest, just to fill time, so we're guaranteed of having something. So we always like when PR people pitch us multiple tape opportunities, because we'll use it in radio to the fullest extent.
I think we'll take one more question before we wrap. Yes.
I was just wondering, kind of swinging back a little bit around to the citizen journalism thing, that as far as, like, what is your opinion on, like, bloggers and how they, like, helped or hurt you? Like, I found that, I don't have a ton of experience in PR at this point, but I've done more pitching to, like, mommy bloggers if there's a specific product that I think would be effective for them, whereas, like, a couple years ago, I wouldn't have necessarily had that opportunity to pitch to them, and I would have had to go to you guys. So do you find that some of those products that you would have been inundated with have kind of fallen by the wayside now that there are other people available for us to contact, or...?
I can't say I really have any experience with that. It hasn't affected me. I don't really follow the bloggers, but I would say for all of you, it's certainly another avenue for you guys to go through, you know, to reach an audience. However you guys could reach your audience is wonderful. It's not always going to be through us, but I haven't had any experience with bloggers.
Right. I don't see bloggers as really competition because, well, first of all, they're not professionals. Secondly, they have no need to be objective. So you're talking about something very different from journalism when you're talking about bloggers. I do think that blogs are wonderful. They have their place. And sure, like Carla said, they're great for you guys because you have another source. Another thing about bloggers is they're a lot less likely to try to perform the journalism end around on a PR person. When you give us a story, we're going to look, if we're doing our jobs, we're going to look into the cracks and try to read between the lines of the story to see if there's something more there. Part of what a PR person does is control the flow of information. You want us to report something a certain way to shed the people you're representing in a positive light. We're objective. We don't necessarily want to do that. With bloggers, you're going to find that they don't, since they're not professional reporters, they often don't take that time, and they're more likely to put your information out there in the way that you want it to be consumed and read.
Okay, well, I think that's all the time we have. I want to thank our panelists, Christopher, David, Carla, and Bruce. Thank you very much for coming out today. And you gave us some great messages. I think, in closing, understanding the immediacy and appreciating the immediacy of what you do is important, as well as knowing the audience, the stories, and the journalists, who the journalists are. So on behalf of the New Jersey chapter of the Public Relations Society of America and Jersey Shore Public Relations and Advertising Association, thank you very much for coming out today.
And that will wrap things up for this edition of the Lou Betkin on Communications podcast. We hope you enjoyed the program. If you have comments or suggestions about these programs, again, the email address is steve@beingthemedia.com. And we'd also like to take this opportunity to remind our listeners that we're working on a book about podcasting with podcast veteran Donna Papacosta of Toronto, Canada. The book's called The Business of Podcasting. It's also the website, thebusinessofpodcasting.com, where you can sign up for our email update list and get information on the book's publication and interchange ideas with us about the topics that you'd like to see us cover as we prepare this publication. Remember, thebusinessofpodcasting.com. Sign up for the email list, and we'll keep you posted on the progress of that book. We produce this program in the studios of the Lubetkin Media Companies in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. We're on the web at beingthemedia.com. And again, if you want to see the video of this media panel discussion that we just presented in audio, visit our sister station, statebroadcastnews.com. For everyone at the Lubetkin Media Companies, this is Steve Lubetkin. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you out there on the net. Take good care.